Chapter 14. Doris Van Eboli had lived on the Imperial Palace grounds for 10 years. As wife of the First Minister, she had entry to the grounds and could pass freely from the dome to the open, with her fingerprints as the pass. In the confusion that followed Cleon's assassination, her pass had never been removed. And now, when, for the first time since that dreadful day, she wanted to move from the dome into the open spaces of the grounds, she could do so. She had always known that she could do so easily only once, for upon discovery the pass would be cancelled. But this was the one time to do it. There was a sudden darkening of the sky as she moved into the open, and she felt a distinct lowering of the temperature. The world under the dome was always kept a little lighter during the night period than natural night would require, and was kept a little dimmer during the day period. And, of course, the temperature beneath the dome was always a bit milder than the outdoors. Most Trentorians were unaware of this, for they spent their entire lives under the dome. To Doris, it was expected, but it didn't really matter. She took the central roadway, into which the dome opened, at the site of the Dome's Edge Hotel. It was, of course, brightly lit, so that the darkness of the sky didn't matter at all. Doris knew that she would not advance 100 meters along the roadway without being stopped, less, perhaps, in the present paranoid days of the junta. Her alien presence would be detected at once. Nor was she disappointed. A small ground car skittered up, and the guardsman shouted out the window, "What are you doing here? Where are you going?" Doris ignored the question and continued to walk. The guardsman called out, "Halt!" Then he slammed on the brakes and stepped out of the car, which was exactly what Doris had wanted him to do. The guardsman was holding a blaster loosely in his hand, not threatening to use it, merely demonstrating its existence. He said, "Your reference number." Doris said, "I want your car." "What?" The guardsman sounded outraged. "Your reference number, immediately." And now the blaster came up. Doris said quietly, "You don't need my reference number." Then she walked toward the guardsman. The guardsman took a backward step. "If you don't stop and present your reference number, I'll blast you." "No. Drop your blaster." The guardsman's lips tightened. His finger began to edge toward the contact. But before he could reach it, he was lost. He could never describe afterward what happened in any accurate way. All he could say was, "How was I to know it was the Tiger Woman?" The time came when he would be proud of the encounter. "She moved so fast, I didn't see exactly what she did or what happened. One moment I was going to shoot her down. I was sure she was some sort of mad woman. And the next thing I knew, I was completely overwhelmed." Doris held the guardsman in a firm grip, the hand with the blaster forced high. She said, "Either drop the blaster at once, or I will break your arm." The guardsman felt a kind of death grip around his chest that all but prevented him from breathing. Realizing he had no choice, he dropped the blaster. Doris Van Eboli released him. But before the guardsman could make a move to recover, he found himself facing his own blaster in Doris' hand. Doris said, "I hope you've left your detectors in place. Don't try to report what's happened too quickly. You had better wait and decide what it is you plan to tell your superiors. The fact that an unarmed woman took your blaster and your car may well put an end to your usefulness to the junta." Doris started the car and began to speed down the central roadway. A 10-year stay on the grounds told her exactly where she was going. The car she was in, an official ground car, was not an alien intrusion into the grounds and would not be picked up as a matter of course. However, she had to take a chance on speed, for she wanted to reach her destination rapidly. She pushed the car to a speed of 200 kilometers per hour. The speed, at least, eventually did attract attention. She ignored radioed cries, demanding to know why she was speeding, and before long the car's detectors told her that another ground car was in hot pursuit. She knew that there would be a warning sent up ahead, and that there would be other ground cars waiting for her to arrive. But there was little any of them could do short of trying to blast her out of existence, something apparently no one was willing to try, pending further investigation. When she reached the building she had been heading for, two ground cars were waiting for her. She climbed serenely out of her own car and walked toward the entrance. Two men at once stood in her way, obviously astonished that the driver of the speeding car was not a guardsman, but a woman dressed in civilian clothes. "What are you doing here? What was the rush?" Doris said quietly, "Important message for Colonel Hender Lynn." "Is that so?" said the guardsman harshly. There were now four men between her and the entrance. "Reference number, please." Doris said, "Don't delay me." "Reference number," I said. "You're wasting my time." One of the guardsmen said suddenly, "You know who she looks like? The old First Minister's wife, Dr. Venebile, the Tiger Woman." There was an odd backward step on the part of all four, but one of them said, "You're under arrest." "Am I?" said Doris. "If I'm the Tiger Woman, you must know that I am considerably stronger than any of you, and that my reflexes are considerably faster. Let me suggest that all four of you accompany me quietly inside, and we'll see what Colonel Lynn has to say." "You're under arrest," came the repetition, and four blasters were aimed at Doris. "Well," said Doris, "if you insist." She moved rapidly, and two of the guardsmen were suddenly on the ground groaning, while Doris was standing with a blaster in each hand. She said, "I have tried not to hurt them, but it is quite possible that I have broken their wrists. That leaves two of you, and I can shoot faster than you can. If either of you makes the slightest move, the slightest, I will have to break the habit of a lifetime and kill you. It will sicken me to do so, and I beg you not to force me into it." There was absolute silence from the two guardsmen still standing. No motion. "I would suggest," said Doris, "that you two escort me into the Colonel's presence, and that you then seek medical help for your comrades." The suggestion was not necessary. Colonel Lynn emerged from his office. "What is going on here? What is..." Doris turned to him. "Ah, let me introduce myself. I am Dr. Doris Venebile, the wife of Professor Harry Selden. I have come to see you on important business. These four tried to stop me, and as a result, two are badly hurt. Send them all about their business and let me talk to you. I mean you no harm." Lynn stared at the four guardsmen, then at Doris. He said calmly, "You mean me no harm? Though four guardsmen have not succeeded in stopping you, I have 4,000 at my instant call." "Then call them," said Doris. "However quickly they come, it will not be in time to save you, should I decide to kill you. Dismiss your guardsmen, and let us talk civilly." Lynn dismissed the guardsmen and said, "Well, come in, and we will talk. Let me warn you, though, Dr. Venebile, I have a long memory." "And I," said Doris. They walked into Lynn's quarters together.